Hi, everybody. It's Wednesday at 8 p.m., and my name is Brian Powers. Welcome to NJRR Live on Revolution Radio. We're back! Did you miss us? I know I missed spilling coffee over everything as soon as I hit the go live button. I missed that. Yeah, what a mess. Grab one of those days. I've had one of those, like, 3 weeks. But it's been productive, and I did miss you. Make sure you jump on the live stream. You can say hi. Stick your comments up there. See, Anti-Missouri, I missed you. See, somebody did miss me. Anti-Missouri missed me there. Thank you, Anti-Missouri. We appreciate you. But we're back. Idavox is on Tuesday nights. NJR Live on Wednesday nights. And I am Brian Powers, and we're here to talk to you about the world of grassroots activism, and that's what we're going to get into tonight. I think, really, I'm gonna talk about tonight's show as like just completely staying in my comfort zone. Really, we're gonna talk about New Jersey. We're gonna talk about weed. we got a guy from New Jersey, and I'm gonna start off tonight by talking a little bit about unions, because you know that's where I come from, and if I'm gonna ease my way back into this festivities here. I'm going to start off with something I know a lot about. And, you know, for those of you that don't know, they've just been tuning in over the last few weeks as Revolution Radio has rolled out a national thing. I'm a union organizer by trade. I started off union organizing as a volunteer because I worked at a union job and I got into the union. I was a shop steward. I really enjoyed, you know, working for the members and doing the things that a shop steward did in the shops, the grassroots stuff, you know. Fighting with the boss when the guy got suspended or filing grievances when the bosses were not doing the right thing and having those interactions. And I really loved it. And I moved on to a professional career and, you know, and that ended suddenly and horribly. And what I did was I had the experience of seeing good the good and the bad of unions. And I think right now the main concern I have is that unions are just essentially an arm of the Democratic Party. And that's bad for a number of reasons. And one, of course, because unions shouldn't be an arm of a political party. They should be the center in the consolidation of worker power to fight the capitalist system back until we all have, you know, our fair share of the profits from our labor. That's really what they should be. So when you center a labor union movement on a political party, it just completely loses the entire nature of the organization. But that's what many, many labor unions have done. They've decided that their political power is much more important than workers' power. And that's just a mistake off the bat. And the unions generally under the AFL-CIO have all kind of fallen in line under this. And I can name the big ones and some of the bigger ones, SEIU, the AFT, and Randy Weingartner, who is one of the most corrupt and inept union leaders in the history of the United States of America, who clearly hates teachers, is in charge of a teachers' union. And then a union I worked for, CWA, these very large unions. And Chris Shelton, actually came up as a union guy like me and was a splicer out of Brooklyn back from Ma Bell in the day. But he grew up to be a bastard. And, you know, the reason that is because these certain unions are tied into the political system way more than they should be. And there's solutions to that. I don't think it's a problem. Now, the good part about unions is the representation. It is the fact that you get some power in the workplace, that people organize, that workers start to talk together. But I just don't feel like the unions today have that attitude in mind. And they're all patting themselves on the back already for what may be a loss at Amazon. I mean, it's not a given that they're going to form a union at Amazon in the South. And it's in no way an easy task. I applaud the people that are trying to do it. But what good does it do Amazon workers to pay union dues to people who are just going to use that money to elect Democrats? Anti-Missouri says unions today have no power. That's not true. That's not true. They have plenty of power. They have lots of power. They have. I was on buses in brigades of thousands of people to go down to Washington, D.C. and protest for workers' rights. I've been on buses full of 30, 40 people. I've been in halls with hundreds of people in and out of them to go knock on doors and get people elected. Union members elected, union workers elected into office. Unions today have tremendous amount of political power, even though they don't have the same cash reserves as our corporate opposition. But it's how they use that political power, which is essentially to place bets on who's going to win an election rather than groom and try to, you know, run real candidates in this corrupt system, or change the system, or do revolutionary grassroots work. They'd much rather say, I think Joe Biden's going to win, so we're going to give him a bunch of money so he does what we want. This ass-kissing mentality, this I'm going to suck up to whoever's in power so I can get my little piece of the pie, so I can be at a nice dinner with a rubber piece of chicken and talk to some fucking senator who doesn't give a shit about me or my union members, but I have access to power. And that access to power is a drug. I mean, we're going to talk about weed here in a little bit. The most powerful drug I've ever seen in my experience is access to power. People will step over their mothers for it. People will end other people's careers just so they can sit in a room with people, quite frankly, that don't care about them. But they want to have that picture on their Facebook page and all that. Or go to their members and say, look, you know, I'm important. I hang out with senators and shit. Maybe it is just leadership that's the problem. And that's where I say one of my solutions, and one of the solutions I say that we really have to get into, if I'm going to trust labor unions again, what we really have to do is make sure that labor unions are run right. And we're not looking at laws to reform labor unions at all. Nobody's talking about the corruption in labor unions. Everybody's just rah-rah unions. Joe Biden likes unions. But what good does it do? Again, if unions are corrupt, so what we really need to do is make sure unions do the right thing. And I outlined some of that a little bit when I talked to my personal page the other day. And I think the biggest thing you can do is electing shop stewards. It's absolutely the biggest thing you can do, because that's where it starts off. There are many, many unions out there where they appoint shop stewards. So if you get elected the union president, you got a membership of anywhere. You know, some unions only have a couple hundred. Some unions have tens of thousands of members under one president. Depends on your union structure. But some of these bylaws, what they allow you to do is the president gets elected and then appoints shop stewards in the shops to interact with the bosses on a daily basis. And those union presidents, they never appoint the person that has the workers' best interest in mind. They appoint the person that has their best interest in mind. That's going to make them the president again, because these presidential salaries for unions are not too shabby. They're not up there with corporate executives, but a lot of them make six figures and well into it. So they don't really look at building a union, training the best members, getting the most talent in their ranks, making sure the members are most represented. They're looking for political support. So they appoint their lackeys. Apaths serving narcissists. What kind of union is that? You can't elect your own shop steward? That isn't even a fucking union. It's a little fiefdom for a jackass. And they're all over the place. I ain't mentioning my situations because this ain't about my situations. This is about like all these unions around the country. Don't elect shop stewards. Listen to me very carefully. You're a union member, and I'm going to talk about union members in a minute. If you're a union member, and you're allowing somebody to appoint your shop steward, how do you feel about that? You got somebody over you who's not in your shop every day telling you who's going to represent you if your career is on the line, if your boss accuses you of something. You going to trust some union boss that you didn't to appoint somebody in your shop who's got your best interest in mind and not their own? You're a more trusting person than me. Way more trusting than me. And union members, I'm going to yell at all you collectively, all whatever, 20 million of you, 13 million of you that are left. Let me tell you the most common. Whenever I meet work, I love talking to cashiers. I love talking to people at work. It's like my favorite thing to do because I'm into work. You know, I've always been a labor guy. So I like to talk, you know, I meet a cashier. And this is, of course, common in the United States. What do you do for a living? What do you do? Everybody likes talking about their jobs. So it's always a good thing. And, if they hear I'm in a union, say, oh, I'm in a union. Or I mention our union and say, yes, I am. What union are you in? Your most common answer. And 10 times out of 9.999 times out of 10, when I ask, oh, what union are you in? The answer is, I don't know. You don't know. You pay dues. You have elected leadership. They're concerned with how much money you make every day to feed your family. You give a fuck about your kids? You should know what fucking union you're in then, asshole. You should know what union you're in. And then you'll be on Fox News or you'll be on Facebook complaining about, your union doesn't get you a good contract. Your union president sucks. Your union didn't. You don't even know the fucking number of your union, you jackass. Shut up. Go to a union meeting. Run for president. Try your damn self. Change your bylaws. Put the shop stewards in power. Union members are the laziest fucking people on the face of the earth sometimes, and I love them. Every single one of them, I love you. Wake up and stop letting these little petty tyrants run your life on your dime. You don't even go to a union meeting. And when you do go to a union meeting, because you got your free rubber chicken. That chicken tastes like shit. I've never been to a union meeting with great food. But that's why half the union members are there. Oh, look at the food. Look what they got. They got a sub sandwich. They got a soda. These are the most important things to union members some days. And it's got to end. We need the and union members, the guys that I'm preaching to the choir, the ladies that I'm preaching to the choir with here, you're just as mad as me. And you know this is all set out of love. You know this is all set out of love, right? When I call you lazy. I really got to get another co-host. It's just going to be me yelling in a microphone for a half hour. Y'all going to stick around for that? Anti-Missouri is still here. Local one, Anti-Missouri knows their local number. We're going to send you a prize. Make sure you email BDP at NJ Revolution Radio. There you go. Local one, Anti-Missouri knows what local number they're in. Email me your address. I'll send you a prize. I'll send you a little New Jersey Revolution Radio button or something like that. You know, we'll get into it. I don't know what else is going on. I guess we could talk about it. And I guess the big thing on the news before I get into our interview here, we did mention it on the Idavox report a little bit. And I guess I wanted to get more out of Daryl, but it's his show and his thoughts on the George Floyd, the trial of Derek Chauvin, the man that murdered George Floyd there. And the few details that I've taken in, the few, you know, segments of this trial I've watched or the reports on it or whatever. It's been hard to watch for me. And I know many have expressed that same thing. And then there's other people that are completely obsessed with it. But I think no matter where you land, whether you think they're going to find him guilty or whether you think they're going to find him innocent, I think everybody's kind of got like this tense anticipation of a large reaction across the country. And I do know that, you know, that can be a very, very good thing for change. The bottom line is I don't think we would be kind of considering that this guy would actually be convicted if it wasn't for all the protests and everything. But we have had a history of this country just simply ignoring the facts. I don't know what to say, but when it comes to police murder, we have a consistent record of allowing police to get away with these kinds of things. But the details of this case are chilling. And the more you get into it, the worse it looks. But the bottom line is there are still plenty of Derek Chauvins out there. The attitude from our establishment towards police reform has been to basically train the police more. But it goes way deeper than that. And we're not talking about the economic issues, the racist issues, the deep rooted white supremacy in our police culture. We're not there yet. I think what I worry about is if we get a conviction, which of course, you know, we don't even know if a conviction means justice, because what is he convicted of? You know, he could be convicted of a lesser charge or something like that. But even if we do get a conviction, do we do the typical liberal thing and celebrate that temporary victory? Do we do that typical, hey, we got a conviction, so now there's no more racism, just like when Obama got elected president? You know, it's all good now. But that's, we all know, you know, that live in the real world, not in the political world, that won't be the case. So I do hope, I mean, I hope, obviously, you know, for a conviction, for justice for that family. I hope the family feels like it gets justice. But I also hope that we continue to move forward, and that the momentum that started with his murder by this pig continues to move forward, and it doesn't get held up no matter, you know, what the outcome of that trial. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, and we'll stay on it, and I anticipate probably doing a show about that, you know, when we get a chance here on Revolution Radio. Right now, I'm going to do a commercial. Hey, this is the music I did for Corey Lewis Teague. If you look back, we did a special interview with Corey Lewis Teague, a pastor out of Patterson. This is music I used. It's good music. I like this gospel music. I don't listen to enough gospel music. One of a few forms of music I don't listen to enough. So check it out. Today's NJRR Live is brought to you by the Editorial Board. And the Editorial Board is our group of activists, revolutionaries, writers, songwriters, broadcasters, people who give opinions on movies, music, and art. We're going to have another review this month with our reviewer, Marilyn. We're going to have our attorney, Bennett Zarofsky, come in and talk to us about police accountability. And we're going to have Pat Fahey come in more to talk to us about social justice, labor rights, and economics. And all these members of our editorial board meet regularly. They support us financially. They make sure our staff is taken care of. They make sure the bills are paid. And then they get to work and they create with us. And I'm really excited about this month's programming, brought to you by the Revolution Radio editorial board. Check us out, www.njrevolutionradio.com. That's www.njrevolutionradio.com. I am now bringing in Sanjay Chaudhry. I said that right, right? I got that right.
We are good. You are right. Actually, all I was right. Aggressively taking notes while you're talking here. I feel like you need a co-pilot on this. So I got notes on all the stuff you're just ranting about.
I was going to just jump into it. Go ahead. Now, what do you think about
I was dying. You're pretty funny. I think, you know, we laugh together offline, but you're funny. You're a funny guy. I just want to say that.
It's passion, man. It really is. Like, it's real hard, you know? Like,
I know exactly where you're coming from.
You know, you're an activist, and I think sometimes, you know, when you're really into an issue, and we'll get into weed here in a minute and stuff, but it doesn't really matter what you're into, whether you're a labor rights activist, whether you're into weed, or whether you're what into, you kind of have the benefit of foresight, because you're so into something, because you're so into the news. I think you can start to kind of see the future a little bit. And I've felt that way as an activist in labor and stuff for like 20 years now. And it just gets to a point where you just start yelling at people to try to get them to listen to you, because clearly,
I think it's because you're very passionate. Activism, I think generally, if it's cannabis, union, whatever it is, it's because of someone's passion. And usually that passion comes from injustice. You said you've been burned. I don't know. I sort of know some of your story. I don't know the whole story. But I think when someone's been burned by something they're passionate about, that births an activist. I lost my children because of cannabis. That birthed my activism. Cannabis prohibition was weaponized against me. That made me not hide and stay low. That made me stand up, you know. So sometimes adversity can birth an activist. You know, I was birthed from injustice.
One of the things,
I was born.
Yeah. Would you say you started out in activism as a cannabis activist, or were you into other things before?
Let me introduce myself for people that may not know me. I'm Sanjay Chaudhry. I've worn a lot of hats in my career. I have a few different businesses, a lot of different interests. I have bipolar disorder, so I'm kind of all over the place. And cannabis has really helped me a lot to manage that holistically and naturally without a lot of the psychotropic medications that can squash your libido, squash your mind, and kind of leave you in a vacuous shell of a human being. So I'm hoping through cannabis cultivation, I'm looking to be a legal cannabis cultivator in the state of New Jersey in the near future here. And I'm hoping to not just pump out a bunch of hydro to make as much money as I can, but I'm looking to produce a lot of quality medicine that I've been studying for the last 23 years very intimately, so that people that are really looking for medicine and they don't just want to get high and, like, you know, whatever. If people, you know, there's over 10,000 different strains of cannabis, and there's so many different cannabinoids that I think cannabis holds the keys to most of our medical issues in the world, most of our healthcare. I think cannabis in 100 years will be leading the charge in a lot of different diverse issues that we may not even be thinking about right now.
I think one of the problems, and we've talked about this before, is that the research on cannabis has been stifled by these laws, as well as, you know, the usage. And we of course, you know, I think I usually come at it from the social justice angle, the locking up of people of color and things like that. But there's been a tremendous impact on the scientific community, which, you know, can't study these chemicals because of law.
Right, exactly. To do real research, you need to have a large sample. So if you want to do research, you need to be growing 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 plants. Then you can make generalizations, you know, even for breeding purposes. If you're breeding, you don't want to be breeding with 5 or 6 plants. You know, a lot of things that I've done in legal states where you can grow a couple plants, you can find some strains that are useful and combine them and cross them and make generalizations. But if you really want to find the best of the best, you know, there's a seed company out of California. I don't like them, so I'm not going to mention them by name. But I like some of the stuff they do. But they did a 10,000 seed crack for a particular pheno hunt. So they cracked 10,000 of their seeds. I think they were F3 or F4 seeds. So sort of a fairly well-refined strain. But they really wanted to get it, especially like an ultimate special female, ultimate special male. So when you grow 10,000 plants, then all of a sudden you have the sample size where even a moron's going to be able to, you know, if you smoke them all, test them all, whatever, you'll be able to identify like, all right, this plant is really special. This one yields a lot. This one is really potent. This one really, you know, helps with X, Y, Z. So when you have this huge sample size, then you can really get into it. And all of the prohibition across the world has stifled that. So no one, you know, you can't do that. There's not someone that's illegally growing 10,000 plants just to study it, you know, because, you know, maybe people
would want seen it.
Do it for money, but no one's doing it because you're not going to do it not for money and take a tremendous felonious risk to grow thousands of plants.
Yeah. One thing I saw on the black market was when some of the European countries started legalization and we started to see the effects of cannabis here in the United States, where the potency really went up. And I know that some opponents of cannabis say, well, you know, this isn't the same kind of weed you smoked. It's got high THC. And that's true. But I think the real reason behind that spike in THC and these beautiful like cherry colored strains and rainbow and all this great, wonderful stuff we see is the result of legalization overseas. And that genetic study, was really with the intent of getting people as fucked up as possible. You know, of spiking.
Now let me stop you right there. What you're talking, it sounds good. Maybe you read it in like a fantasy story. That's not what's happening.
I'm telling you from personal observation.
Best weed
from 20 years of weed smoking, I remember getting only brick weed from Mexico.
Hang on. Let the guest get a word in here.
Right? Go ahead.
Come on. If I may, Your Highness, let me get a word in here. But all right, so Amsterdam, like let's take Amsterdam for example. I've been there a handful of times. It's one of my happy places. I consider it, you know, like a home away from home. But in Amsterdam, when Americans come there, and I'm going to put myself in the American book here, they say like you can tell it's an American two things. They're the loudest guy in the bar, and they said they knew I was an American because I was the loudest guy in the coffee shop. I'm like, all right, fair. And then they generally like they look at us kind of like crackheads because in Amsterdam still they roll spliffs, so it's, you know, it's weed mixed with tobacco. The goal is not to get super super high. But in America, we've always been, you know, we're America. We want the best. We want the strongest. We're going to push the boundaries. That's our nature as a country.
Right.
And God bless us. That's one of the great things. I think we can agree. That's great about America. You know, but we want to push the boundaries. So we really have pushed potency here. And it's good because it went from like back in the day, it was 6 to 12% or something. And then 18%, you know, in the 90s, 18% was the highest thing you could see. And then things started cracking into the 20s. And now we're cracking into the 30s. Some things are like approaching the 40s. You know, I had a strain that tested at 37.6% called Nintendo. And with some of these strains, I'm all for potency for a lot of my conditions. I have four qualifying conditions in the state of New Jersey. So potency, I need high THC. But with something like Crescendo, it is a very popular strain. It's one of the strongest strains out there right now. But it was so high in THC. When I smoked it, I got a tremendous amount of the THC high. But I didn't find it to be great medicine. Because what happens is with anything, there's only 100%. You know, if you have like a flower, there's only 100%. This is a good run video. I can bring a flower up. All right. So here's a flower. So there's only 100% material here. So, you know, let me just stick it to the camera here. Yeah. It's, you know, there can only be 100%. So a lot of this is going to be leaves and the fibrous material. So of the total, only a certain percentage of this 100% can be cannabinoids. Now, if we're hyper-focusing on THC, which is great, and that's like, you know, the main cannabinoid, we're forgetting about everything else. There's over 125 cannabinoids that we know of, and there may be a lot more that we don't even know about yet. So when we hyper-focus on one of these things, we lose the entourage effect of all the other cannabinoids. So Crescendo is something that I liked it, and I did not want to keep running that strain by itself. I thought it would be useful to cross with some other strains I've bred in the past to use that ultra potency, but then also make a better medicine out of it rather than just like a crack weed kind of thing.
Yeah. I should take this time to express that we are not medical doctors and that, you know, talk to your doctors when you make decisions like this and we're all entitled to our own opinions, but I think it is important that, you know, we don't put it, you talk about these cannabinoids and these different chemicals in it. Now, let me ask you a question. When you look at the laws being passed, and right now, I think we're up to 19. I think New York was the 19th state. I don't know if it's all the way passed, but if they do pass, they'll be the 19th state to legalize recreational marijuana.
I thought we were 14. You sure about that?
Nah, I think it's 19.
Yeah, well, 13? Isn't, or no, wasn't Jersey 13? I'm not sure. Where are you these days, Maine?
Oh, they just, you know, they, in the last couple of months, I'm in Maine. in the last couple of months, Maine went recreational. Maine had it on, it had it on the books, but it hadn't been implemented yet. So it got implemented this year. New Mexico just legalized. New Jersey just legalized. There's been like this. It seems like every week I wake up and turn on NPR and there's another conversation about a state legalized.
They talk about that like tipping point. I think we've reached it and it's happening now. You know, eventually everywhere it might happen. Some states are never going to do it. A lot of the really conservative, really Republican states are never going to do it. But eventually it'll be federally legalized. And then those dipshits, let's just call them dipshits for argument's sake, will then need to figure out how to manage it, you know.
And be what do you think? Now, I mean, I've looked around and I've been saying that, you know, just from my kind of opinion, I think Oregon is probably the most progressive out there right now, maybe, with their laws. California's been the longest term. Colorado, I think, was the first state that went recreational.
You know, so there's Alaska, from my understanding, Alaska allows people to grow 25 plants. So you can go up to Alaska and grow 25 plants. But
there you go. So I find that Maine, the medical side of it is wonderful. I think it's really done very well. But the recreational side is a fucking disaster. Now, we just talked about all these chemical components and scientific research and things that you've studied for a long time. Do you see that translating into the laws that we are passing? Is there a rhyme and reason between the science of cannabis and the legalization of cannabis?
No, I don't think science. The whole reason it's been illegal for so long is because they don't use reason. You know, it started off because what was it, Anslinger said, white women are going to want to dance with black men if they smoke it. It's true, they do, but that's ridiculous. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't say that. It's crazy.
Who is Anslinger? You were referring to Harry Anslinger, right?
Yeah. Good old Harry Anslinger.
Who's Harry Anslinger? Tell us about Harry Anslinger. Give us some history lessons.
I'm not the most, you know, I know little bits about him. I just know enough from what I've heard and read. But yeah, he was one of the main advocates for making marijuana illegal. Back in, you know, so even marijuana is the, you know, most used nomenclature in our country for cannabis. Now, why do we say marijuana, a Spanish word for cannabis? We don't say zapatos, you know, for shoes, right? We don't say, like, hey, Dave, get my zapatos, you know? So why is it marijuana? Like, why is it marijuana? Does anyone ever think about that? It's because at that time, Anslinger and his dickhead friends, they want to negatively associate with Mexicans, Latin immigrants, you know, and that's the way they did it. So even now, it's still marijuana. Even in Jersey, these assholes, these senators, I talk to these guys, I go there and I speak nicely to them and I testify a lot and I'm kind when I'm there and I write letters that are kind of like little kind, little not kind. And then right now I'm not going to be kind to them at all. But these guys in Jersey have done it. It's like these evil, you have corrupt politicians, you have big pharma, and you have the hub of organized crime in the country all working together. And these dipshits, all three together, figured out how to separate marijuana and still bust people for marijuana and let cannabis be legal so the elite people and the connected people and the savvy people can now grow it. Now let me use this term. I was talking to this fucking lobbyist today. I'm not going to blast anybody. It's not my style. Talking to a lobbyist today and he was using the term pikers. So pikers are people like you and I. Pikers are people that probably are indigenous to cannabis. We've always been here. This is our plant. This is my plant. This is your plant. You know, we smoke right. It. We need it. It's our medicine. We're indigenous. But right. This guy's calling us pikers, people that can't afford it or, you know, kind of use minimal, you know, scared of using, risking that much. Because we don't have that much to risk. It's not like we have millions of dollars to throw in. So he uses the term pikers, which I found offensive.
Yeah, I do.
I asked him if he smoked. He's like, yeah, I smoke. Occasionally I'll have edibles. He's like, you know, I got kids and like, whatever. I'm like, okay, I get all that. But I'm like, you are not, you're a colonizer of this. You're more of a colonizer than, you're not an indigenous person. So especially it's like, I don't like the smoke, you know, I'll have a little edible or whatever. I'm like, okay, dude, you're a colonist. You're an imperialist. And it kind of bugs me. Then I was talking about myself and why I'm now working on the assumption that I'm going to be approved for a license in the state because I'm qualified mainly because I'm qualified. I also am of color and I have a disability. You know, I've been a legacy grower for a long time in a lot of states, you know, in observance of all the state and local ordinances, of course. So I'm confident I'm going to get it. But then he told me also, he's like, you're not a minority. And I was like, what? And I'm like, I'm definitely a minority. He's like, well, kind of. And then when he said kind of, I hung up on him. But just as a word to you or anyone else, if you're a Caucasian male, don't tell any of the marginalized races that they're not a minority. It's not a good look.
That's crazy.
So I hung up on him. I answered it. But I held up because don't tell someone that is a minority, you're not a minority. I'm not saying I'm black. I'm not saying I'm Hispanic. But to tell me that I'm not a minority, I was pretty offended by it.
No, that's an insane statement. But that's, you know, and what I've been warning, I think, as I get out and start this.
I'm only saying this just to say, like, that's, we call them cannabaggers. I would call this guy a cannabagger. Yeah. Someone who's coming into this to exploit something that's not really his space to be in.
Right.
But that's
There's money in it, and that's all these types. I mean, this.
So you and I are bikers, rural bikers trying to make our way into this industry, which we have a right to be in. And he himself is now putting himself in a position where he's a lobbyist. He knows everybody. So he has a right to be here more than me. But that's just the mindset of the capitalist. And these people that like to invade something. You know, there's always been invasion around the world. People like to take over. So you don't belong here. Why do some people feel like, hey, now that it's legal, we're going to do that? I've spoken with so many investors as I'm trying to raise some funds for my Sweet Virginia Soil LLC to be able to get a macro grow instead of a micro grow. And some, like, about 75% of the people who have approached me or who I've approached and that I spoke with that want to invest heavily in cannabis to cultivate it do not smoke cannabis. 75%, just for me personally, of the like 12 or 15 people I've spoken with, over 3 out of 4 of them don't even smoke, but they're really eager to grow and invest in growing. You know, so it's like, it's mind boggling. So it is just from, I'm just using myself. So I'm not saying this is the whole thing, but this is my personal experience in New Jersey over the past few years. And it's really sad to see that because I'm not looking to work with these types of people. And they are the ones that are coming in because they can. They have the assets. They have the connections. It's been some councilmen of some towns. It's been people that are in politics. So they, you know, especially if it's someone in their town, they say, like, I can get a license for it. You can grow here because, you know, I'm on the board and, you know, yada, yada. And that's just, you know, there's so much corruption. There's so much corruption. I don't want to blast any town specifically or anything, but yeah. It's ugly. It's ugly. And if people think
it's vulture capitalism. But in weed, and I think that maybe potheads, you know, just like honestly, like any other good-hearted activist man who loves something and got into it because they had passion, you kind of assume that it's going to be cool because weed is cool. But
it's
these people aren't
love and sharing. Some of us don't just care about money. Even if I grow and have like a multi-billion-dollar company, I'm not looking to get bank. I'm not going to suddenly be coming on, you know, your show with gold chains or something. You know, driving a fancy car.
Well, then I'm not letting you on.
I may get a nicer shepherd. That's the I'm a shepherd.
If you make millions with your soil or your weed farm or whatever, and you don't come on here looking like Mr. T, I don't see the point. Why?
What I want to do, the point is there's a $8 billion company as of today, Curaleaf, $8 billion market.
Oh, God.
I used to be a Wall Street trader. I used to be a hedge fund. I used to have my own hedge fund. So these dickheads are worth $8 billion. They're selling moldy weed. So
oh, yeah.
In
this shaking country, the crystals off of them to make product with. These guys do some of the most shady shit.
What's great about this industry for yourself in Maine, for anyone anywhere, if you are passionate about this plant and you know how to grow it, they've built this $100 billion industry in America right now. And the people that are growing it are completely inept. They're all colonizers. They're all imperialists. And they built this $100 billion company. But they don't know what the fuck they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They're polluting it. They're producing moldy weed. They've been growing for a decade. They can't grow weed still, really?
You know, how the fuck are you going to grow weed and create environmental hazards? These motherfuckers figured it out.
That's what I'm saying. So anyone that's savvy, if you can get into it and do it in a way where you produce high-quality stuff that's clean medicine – there's already $100 billion of low-hanging fruit to take. Like, they've already got the customers. There's already the people there. So to enter this industry, I'm biting at my chops. I used to play poker. It's like, I'm going to go play poker against, like, you know, kindergartners who have billions of dollars of chips there. It's like, okay, guys, let's play poker. This is going to be fantastic.
It would be great, but here's what they're doing, Sanjay. Despite your best efforts to grow an honest business and provide good medicine to people, they'll come in. They'll go straight to the state house, purchase them a few state assembly people, and regulate your ass right out of business. They'll make you put in micron filters that you don't need or make an inspection. In Maine, they want to require people to put cameras in any place that marijuana could be grown. In other words, if you are a caregiver with property that you grow weed on, they want to put a fucking camera in your living room because weed could be grown there.
Wow.
So they don't. Right. So you could say, look, so potheads, and I love it. We need people who want to go in, grow good weed, and provide good labor into this industry to do things. But that's not going to stop those pricks. They're going to go straight into, which is what they're doing. That's what Curaleaf does.
Regulations. If I
Curaleaf is up here in Maine, Curaleaf is in California. They're talking about with everything.
So you're talking about extra regulations. I've been speaking to the Department of Health. I spoke with Jeff Brown. I spoke with Judith Pershnelli. I've spoken with, you know, a lot of the governor's people. And I always talk about more regulations. We need to regulate them more. I'm not worried about regulations. You know, I'm going to be growing a zero waste. We'll be close to zero waste. Nothing will be going, you know, there's not going to be any runoff. There's not going to be anything. I recycle the soil. It'll be recycled forever. You know, for 50 years, it'll be 50-year-old soil. It's never going anywhere. There is no trash. Everything is gone. You know, these guys aren't going to be able to compete. They don't know how to grow weed. They don't know how to manage their waste. So I'll be producing it cleaner and more. You know, I've studied, my background in school is economics and finance, horticulture and things. I'm self-taught. I've been a master gardener in a few states, but I've studied recently agronomy and econometrics, which is fantastic. Just sort of the study of the mathematics of growing something and the economics of growing something. So it's really neat. So a lot of these guys, they just talk about yield, 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 but they don't understand that there's so much more than yield. And as someone that's growing now yourself, a lot of it is not just yield. It's like, how long does it take? How much time does it take to trim it? Do you have to spend twice the time to trim it? You know, like, and so there's just so many different metrics to consider. So unless you're going to take every single metric and give it a valuation and then put it into a, you know, Excel sheet and like pump out all these metrics, you're not going to be able to compete once someone comes in and they are doing that, you know?
Yeah. We'll see where the industry goes. I mean, it's it feels like the drug war is still on, though. I mean, as we get into legalization, I do think that we're going to get a federal legalization bill here. I don't know that Joe Biden can be moved to sign it. He's firing people in his own administration for past use of marijuana, which is beyond crazy for the year 2021.
The nice thing about Biden, I did vote for him. Biden was my second least favorite candidate from the Democrats. I vote Democrat. I was discussing this. I'll say discussing this with a friend of ours recently. And she, you probably know who I'm talking about. She is very progressive like yourself. I'm very progressive also, but I'm a realist. I'm also brown in America. So I would love to go for the most left guy, you know, if he's there, but it's not valid. I just want to go a little bit left so a guy like me is less likely to get my neck stepped on for 9 minutes. You know, some of you guys go for like utopian, it's got to be perfect, everything, you know.
Well, here's what I'll say.
My son's half brown. If he's going for a candy bar sometime, I don't want him to get 17 bullets in the chest because he's half brown. So incremental change, even though it's not what I want, I would like very much radical change, but it's not realistic. When you get these parties all the way out there, like, I want change, even if it's slow.
I don't care about voting anymore. I never cared about voting much. I don't feel that I'm a Marxist. And Marxists don't believe in change coming from the political structure. We believe in change coming from the social structure. I believe I don't know. You want a vaccine? You go to Cuba if you get sick. I'd rather go there than anywhere else on earth. You know, I'd rather go.
Marxism didn't work. It failed. You know, we tested it. It's like anything. It's a theory. It got tested. It sucked. It didn't work.
How's capitalism working out for us?
It tested
and failed too. So
at least it's still here. At least it's present. Like China's doing it.
What do you call Cuba, Venezuela? There's plenty of socialism out there in the world.
It was not.
There's European countries with socialist models, democratic socialist models. It exists. Get out of here. Capitalism does not rule the world. Capitalism. Listen, capitalism is just a virus. We haven't found a vaccine yet. That's all.
It's going to be an interesting thing now, especially for Jersey, because it's opened up. There's going to be a lot of micro grows. There's going to be a lot of really talented people growing small amounts of weed. So it's going to be really fun. Try it. I think Jersey's a pretty cool state. It's going to get a lot, lot cooler. No one else is tackling consumption lounges. It's going to be a pretty dope state, even though we have the highest taxes, a lot of mafia, a lot of big pharma, all the political corruption. But we're going to have consumption lounges. There's going to be like coffee shops. There's going to be like clubs. There's going to be, you know, everything, you know, like a classic rock kind of, you know, sports bar or whatever. And
it'll be interesting. I'd like to
Amsterdam vibe, I think, is what I'm thinking.
We'll see what happens. You know, everybody's got to get their cut in New Jersey on the way to that. So, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens.
I took a note on that when you're talking earlier. You're talking about cuts. Let me go back to my notes here.
Go ahead. Uh-oh. He's taking notes.
I'm telling you, I'm firing all cylinders here.
He's coming. All right. I'm going to brace myself here.
You were talking about profits from our labor. I wanted to talk about that. You remember saying that?
Go ahead. Sure.
I got to quote it down here. So you said
profits from labor.
So Sweet Virginia soil, I make really high quality organic soils. You can grow anything with it. The soils are aged a lot of so it's aging a lot of different inputs and then knowing how to combine them to make a soil that is really good for growing whatever you're trying to grow with it. So I could
blend
specifically for tomatoes or peppers or whatever. So there's lots of different soils. But with that, a lot of my ingredients are aged for 2 years. Some of the ones that are aged the most is 2 years. So I age them for 2 years. I feed them. I cultivate them. Just the soil. I make the soil for 2 years. And then if I do get a license to cultivate, 6 months, I will then be cultivating it, drying it, curing it, whatever. Let's say 6 months. Then as the law is written in Jersey, I can't sell it. I'm not going to be able to sell it. So I make the soil. So for 2.5 years, pretty much, I'm putting this together. I have to sell it to someone else. Let's call him Dave. I have to sell it to Dave. Now, Dave gets to buy it from me at bulk rate. I'm going to be selling it to him for $2,500 a pound, $3,000 a pound. That's like barely $100 an ounce. But if I could sell it myself, I can sell it for $400 or $500 an ounce like the ATCs are currently doing.
Right.
I told Senator Scutari, I've told Jeff Brown in a letter that if and when I get my license, the first thing I'm going to do is file a lawsuit for a non-competitive business practice. There's businesses that are going to be able to compete in the same industry that I'm getting into, but they can grow it, extract it, they can deliver it, they can sell it. Now, why am I going to be here, you know, as a small businessman trying to, you know, give back to my community? I live in Randolph, New Jersey. I'm looking to grow in Randolph, New Jersey. Now, I'm already, you know, under the gun. I don't have millions of dollars to throw in here. I don't have like $50 million I can just, you know, throw in. You know, I'm going to like put everything together, scratch everything I had to get together, dig for some gold, you know, whatever I got to do. And I'm going to make it happen. But I'm already like, I already have like the poker game analogy. I'm coming with a couple chips. And there's people there with $7 billion in chips. And I'm coming in with like $200,000, $300,000 limping in, you know? It's like, okay, I gotta like play real tight. I gotta get a couple of big things here because I cannot compete against someone with $8 billion in chips. And I got 200,000, like some sort of.
Just like piker. Revolution Radio and CNN. Think about that, thing. Right?
I'm a piker. You're a piker. I'm coming in like some fucking piker with this lobbyist piker. Piker. I like that. I'm gonna own this term. I'm a fucking piker.
Oh, God.
So we're just there's some punks that shouldn't be here. You know, for us to even be in this industry is a joke. Forget about I wouldn't be on Earth without this medicine. Forget about like I used to drink to sleep at night as a teenager, you know, until I found cannabis. And I didn't need like I don't drink anymore, you know. This crazy medicine to my life is just something that's been withheld from me, used to take my kids away from me. And then I'm the piker. You're the piker. Get out of here.
That's crazy. And your story, man.
The cannabagger is calling me essentially a piker.
It's crazy, man, because your story ain't alone. There have been literally millions of people who have been fucked with on a level of getting thrown in jail, having
I have
kids
to tell myself
away, having marriages
ripped apart. I have to say that to myself a bunch of times regularly just to like not lose my stuff because I can make it like, oh, it's all me, all this you know injustice for me. It's not. It's millions of people since 1937. No. And most of them black men, black communities, urban communities, you know, a lot of black kids have been separated from their parents and it's madness. Yeah, exactly. It is goddamn madness.
Well, that's what you see me when you see me, you know, yelling and screaming about labor at the beginning of the thing is because it is something that affects a lot of people. And you really, you know, when you feel you've got solutions to something like this and people are clearly doing these things just for profit. I mean, there's only explanation.
They're doing it for profit. I am soliciting people and they're coming in as pure capitalists. They can even, sometimes they'll pretend to say like, oh, you know, I want to like help and, you know, do this. I'm like, okay, at least you're doing it. Someone told me, oh God, here's a quote of someone else. No, this is a person of color. All I care about is, quote, this is a quote. All I care about is money and bitches. And he wants to invest in me, you know? And it's just like, I'm not going to take money from someone like that. That's not what I'm about. I like money and I like bitches. Don't get me wrong. But like if someone comes in like that and I'm talking about getting like into the nitty gritty of why he should and this and that, why am I, you know, all this stuff. And that's what he says to me. He's like, all right, I don't care. Like, I don't care about any of that. I know you're good at it. I see your weed. It's good. You know, I saw you won that whatever competition or something, you know, but they don't care at all. It's just like, all right, it's like matter of fact, check the box. This person can do that. Check the box exists. And like this person can make me more money so I can get more sex and more bitches, apparently. You know, and it's like, that's not, sorry, dude, I'm not into getting you more sex and bitches, you know?
messing with our magic herb. Sanjay, what are you smoking over there tonight, man? I seen you doing a couple. I've been over here. I figured I would do at least one hit out of everything. So I smoked a little bit of a joint and I took a bong hit and I did some pipe. So, you know, we're good. I'm smoking. What do you got over there? What's your strain?
Two strains, actually. You know, I've been a little wound up right now. Actually, the last couple months, I found out that I'm currently under court order that right now in New Jersey, anybody can smoke. You can smoke weed. It's not legal. I was a medical patient before. Everyone can smoke. If you're a parent, whatever, there's Jake's Law. They can't take your kids away from you. Right now, I'm under an illegal order from Honorable Judge Amorata of Morris County. The guy's, I'm under a current court order from him that says that I cannot see my children, who I've already been restrained from for over 3.5 years, if I drop dirty for THC for 30 days before seeing them, or anytime after that, I can't see them, even though I'm a patient, even though I have 4 qualifying conditions, migraines, anxiety, IBD, IBS, and degenerative spinal conditions, 4 different conditions that I need cannabis for. So the judge says I can't use them if I want to see my kids. You know, so it's just like, it's a real jagged pill to swallow. And there are a lot of people who've gone through similar things. So I'm trying to I try to keep it in focus, but it burns me every day. I have PTSD from this. It's like,
I bet, man.
It's
I
bet.
I know you've.
I left Wall Street. I had a successful hedge fund. I closed down my successful hedge fund in the mid 2000s because I didn't like being a capitalist. It was not from lack of making money. I didn't like it. It gave me nightmares, made me cry. When I made money.
I appreciate you. I appreciate you sharing.
And I left that to be a stay-at-home dad, to be a full-time dad and study soil and study horticulture and be a master gardener and help people set up, you know, community gardens and school gardens and stuff. And like the first fruit my daughter ate, strawberries that I grew. First fruit she was peaches that I grew her. I did that intentionally. All their food, I made it. Like, I was such a good dad. Anything I do, I get so into it. So I don't like to be an okay dad. I knew I was going to have like a fleet of kids. I was gonna have a couple kids. That was it. I don't know. I'm not blessed to have as many kids as you have. You know, it's just like a couple kids. And like, I just want to give it my full attention, you know, single-minded. And I didn't want to be pursuing money. So I did that. And I just really did it for just my own reasons. And then to then lose them because I smoke medical cannabis, you know, it's just like, it hurts. It hurts so much. I can't even use words to describe it. But what I'm smoking now, I've bred strains to deal with all the bullshit of existence. This is a particular strain called Roquan. It's a cross of 4 different strains. What's cool about breeding, what's awesome about cannabis is you can save pollen. If you know how to properly save it and freeze it, you can store pollen in the freezer. So you can, this strain is bred from stuff that I've been growing over 15 years. And you can do that if you save pollen appropriately. So this is a cross of a San Fernando Valley OG, this really special 1978 pre-Soviet invasion Afghani, this special Blue Moonshine from DJ Short, and Skunk Number 1. So a lot of strains that were individually really good for me. I kind of saved them. And often if you find something that works for you and another strain that works for you, you combine them, you can create a strain that's really works for you. That may even be better than either one individually. And that's why I think everyone needs to grow so people can find out what works for them and you know, grow something more intense.
I hear the puppy in the background. Is that guy's okay? Because we're just closing up for the night. I'll just end my part by saying I'm smoking wedding cake because, man, I tell you what, for PTSD, I believe it was Bradford. I'm not sure, but wedding cake has always been a great go-to strain for me. That would have looked
a good one. The other strain I'm smoking is one. It's my interpretation of a breath strain. It's a sweet Virginia soil breath.
Cool. Hey, Sanjay, thanks a lot for coming tonight. Everybody out there can check out Sweet Virginia Soil. You've got a nonprofit as well.
Cannabis Wars Alliance, just working to help end the damage done from almost 100 years of cannabis prohibition. And yeah.
And the puppies in the background. So thanks a lot for stopping by, man. We appreciate you. We appreciate everybody out there in our audience. We will be back again next week. And we'll be back again the week after that. Tuesdays, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. We will hit the air with Idavox and NJR Live talking to you about the world of activism. Next week, our good friend Baman Azad is going to come by. And we're going to get international because, you know, we got to break out. And there's shit going on in Iran, Venezuela, China, Russia. We're going to get around the world. We're going to do some international stuff with our good friend Bahman Azad from the U.S. Peace Council. And maybe I'll find some panels. Maybe we'll mix it up a little bit and have some fun with that. And then coming later in the month, we're going to be talking to more editorial board members. Ben Zarofsky is going to make a return. So we can't wait. You know, check us out. www.njrevolutionradio.com. That's like new journalism, then revolutionradio.com, njrevolutionradio.com. Go there. Make a donation. You can join our editorial board if you want to come to meetings and help produce shows and things like that. This is grassroots media. That's what it is. You ain't got no Walmart sponsoring us. We ain't got no big business. You don't get no government money. This is just grassroots activism getting together, making it happen. So until next week at 8 p.m., this is Brian Powers. And I do want to remind everybody out there that the police can quit their jobs. See you next week, everybody.